Hello, Meat.
Hello, Ronge.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Hey, what do we... Well, actually, before we get to the prize fight...
Yeah?
Or the fight for the prize...
There you go.
We have a mic drop. And we all know that Mike Schilt was...
Lying?
He was kind in his words last night regarding Michael Wacha.
Right.
If
you guys laugh at Tom Stillman, you gotta laugh at that, okay?
Yes. It did look good. Yeah. And as I said earlier, it looked really good coming off the bat. I mean, they were traveling really fast.
That Bellinger home run hurt me. I was at home on my couch, and that hurt me.
He had six balls that were just scorched off of him in play. So anyway, because Mike Schilt was kind, maybe...
He caressed the topic a little bit.
Yes, maybe he wasn't as honest as the rest of us would have liked him to be. Maybe in your life, you have committed some kind of egregious lie, and you knew it was terrible, but you tried to pass it off as being truth.
Right.
Okay, and you knew everybody saw right through it.
Yeah.
Send us a mic drop and tell us what that lie was. Download the 101 ESPN app. Send us a mic drop. And... for example, and I get the feeling we're going to get a lot of people, and we do get text messages. We'll take those, but we certainly would prefer hearing your voice. We want the mic drops. We want to hear from you. But for example, this text message says, I came home one night in high school. Mom said to me, you smell like pot. I responded by saying, no, I don't, because I was too high to come up with anything better.
Raj, that wasn't a text. That was your story. Stop it. Stop it. Your phone number? Did you text the text line?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I promise.
Awkward.
No, but for real, we want to hear from you. Send us a mic drop.
Yeah, for me, for example, like I might tell my Tinder dates, I promise I'm not really as fat as I look in my pictures. Like something like that. Like, obviously, that's BS.
That's a huge, bold-faced lie.
Totally.
So send us yours. I don't lie, so I don't have anything for you. I'm really sorry. What are we fighting over today?
We've got some Cardinals tickets. On Sunday, August 25th, the Cardinals wrap up their series with the Rockies. That day, 30,000 fans, 16 and older, will take home a replica of the 1944 World Series Championship ring, just like the ones the players and coaches received 75 years ago. You can get your tickets now at cardinals.com/promotions.
And me, just looking through some of these text messages, we have far too many listeners who have to lie to police about whether or not they've been drinking.
Yeah.
Okay, change that behavior.
Yeah, stop it.
Stop drinking and driving. Okay?
Idiot.
Just please, please, for everybody's safety, including yours, stop doing that. We need as many listeners as we can get. Who's our fighter today?
We've got Al.
What's up, Al?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I need the answers before you ask the questions, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to give you the answers. Well, here's what we'll do. Just for you, we're going to give you three options for each question.
Stop it, Ron.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You got a sweetheart.
Yeah, right? Hey, Al, have you ever bold-faced lied to somebody and it was not a very good lie?
No.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I just did.
Very good, my friend. Very, very good. Are you ready to fight?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go, Al. Question number one. Jonathan Villar hit MLB's fifth cycle of the season last night. Who was the last Cardinal to hit for the cycle? Was it Mark Grudzielanek, Randall Grichuk, or Fernando Tatis?
I think it was Grudzielanek.
Question number two, Al. The Dodgers, they had back-to-back NL Rookie of the Year winners in 2016 and 2017 with Corey Seager and Cody Bellinger. In the 1990s, the Dodgers won multiple National League Rookie of the Year awards. How many did they win consecutively? Was it three, four, or five?
Three.
All right, question number three, Ezekiel Elliott, continuing his holdout with the Cowboys. Who holds the Cowboys' single-season rushing record of 1,845 yards? Is it Emmitt Smith, Tony Dorsett, or DeMarco Murray?
Emmitt Smith.
And question number four, Michael Wacha is tied with the tied for the Cardinals lead with 21 home runs allowed this season. Which other Cardinal pitcher is tied with him? Is it Jack Flaherty, Dakota Hudson, or Adam Wainwright?
Wow. I had to go Flaherty.
All right, let's bring in Randy. Al, how do you feel?
Not that great.
Okay. See, and I feel like you were being totally honest there.
Yes.
So I think you've been half honest with us today, and we totally appreciate it. Are you at work right now?
No, I just got off a little while ago.
Attaboy. What are you going to do with your night?
I don't know. I'm visiting with my mom right now.
All right. Well, tell mom we said hi.
They say hi.
Hey, Ron, should we get another text about our bold-faced lies?
Well, hold on a second. What did mom say back?
She said hi.
Oh, man, mom's a nice lady.
She's a big sports fan.
Oh, great. We love mom. But go ahead, BT. What's your name? Brad Barnes? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm the handsome Brad. Come on. Yeah. From the 314, my parents hate my wife, so I told them I was going with friends to Europe, but I was really going on my honeymoon. And yes, they didn't know we got married.
Oh.
It's a big lie.
Okay, that is a hell of a lie.
That's what we want to hear from you with a mic drop.
It is a hell of a lie.
Text.
Yeah, send us a mic drop with your biggest lie to somebody else. Randy, say hello to Al and his mom.
Hey, Al and Al's mom. Al, do you hit dingers?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No. That's Big Al.
How you doing, Randy?
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Everything's good. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Good. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing. We appreciate it. Good to have you with us. There you
go.
Yes,
he does.
That's my hero.
Wonder how he's doing.
Great. It's dingers.
Yeah.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Kid's probably wheezing right now.
Yep.
Doing great. All right. Question number one, Randy.
Yes,
you ready?
Sir. Ready. All right.
Jonathan Villar with MLB's fifth cycle of the season last night.
Wow.
Who was the last Cardinal to hit for a cycle?
That was the estimable and unforgettable Mark Grudzielanek, Grud, as he was affectionately known. Grudziel. Enak.
Close.
Thanks. Anak.
Anek.
Anek. Okay.
Yeah. It took me like five times to spell that right today.
Just Grudzielanek.
Grud. Yeah.
Grudzielanek. It's the easiest way to remember.
I prefer Mark. That's what I go by. Question number two, Randy. The Dodgers. They had back-to-back NL Rookie of the Year winners in 2016 and 2017 with Seager and Bellinger. In the 90s, they won multiple NL Rookie of the Year awards. How many did they win consecutively?
Okay, you had, I think it Piazza, Karras, Nomo was in there. See, five strikes me. Todd Hollinsworth was in there somehow. Piazza, Karras, Nomo. I think there were five. So I'll go with five.
All right, question number three. Zeke Elliott continues his holdout. Mm-hmm. Who holds the Cowboys' single-season rushing record of 1,845 yards?
With a big assist from the St. Louis Rams, it was DeMarco Murray. He had like 300 against them. It was unbelievable. And there was like no defense. The Rams provided no defense for him. It was from the first play of the game to the last, man. It was unbelievable.
Wasn't the offense the bad part of the Rams at that point, too?
Well, yeah, and the special teams.
Just everything. All right, Randy, question number four. Michael Wacha, he is tied for the Cardinals' lead with 21 home runs allowed this season. Woo. What other Cardinal pitcher is he tied with?
I know Michaelis has allowed a lot. If he allowed two in his last start, it would be him. I'll go with Miles Michaelis.
We have a winner. Well, Al, I'm sorry. Randy got you today 3-2. But just because you lost the fight doesn't mean your mom loves you any less. She still does. She thinks you're a good boy. It was Mark Grudzielanek in 2005 the last Cardinal to hit for the cycle. You were right, Randy. It was five Dodgers winning a Rookie of the Year awards. Karros, Piazza, Nomo, Hollinsworth, and Mondesi.
Oh, Raul Mondesi.
That was the last one.
Whose son changed his name from Raul to Adalberto.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And that's who we were hoping we were getting when we heard we were getting an Adalberto.
Yeah.
DeMarco Murray in 2014 with 1,845 yards for the Cowboys. And it is Jack Flaherty.
Flaherty.
Who is tied with the Cardinals' lead for home runs allowed in Michael Wacha. So, Al, we appreciate you playing.
All right, y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Al. You too. That's Al with us on the 4 o'clock fight. And it is 4:15. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. The Cardinals are in Los Angeles again tonight.
I love
and
L.A.
Brad Thompson might have to do play-by-play.
Is Dan feeling worse?
No, I think he's feeling better today, last I heard.
Then he'll be okay.
Yeah, but BT with a great job last night. He'll join us to tell about it next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Ron Girandi with you. Our partner Brad Thompson is on the line. Any PTSD last night?
Well, I have missed you guys so much. I'll tell you. What a great greeting. It's been at least 4 or 5 days since I've heard a highlight of one of my home runs. So thank you guys. And a tad bit of PTSD in the first inning when Cody Bellinger did what Cody Bellinger does. Don't make a mistake to this guy, to this club, or you're going to pay for it. And Michael Wacha and the Cardinals figured that one out.
I would say, BT, maybe for you, the worst technological advance in history is the ability to record.
It's pretty awful overall. I'm just still glad that it wasn't there from my regrettable interview in Kansas City after giving up like 8 runs in 2 innings.
Oh, tell us
like
more
that.
About this one.
Yeah. No, I don't want to hear more about that one. Yeah. Where do we go from here is the worst question ever and one that I haven't asked yet to anybody. So I'm glad it wasn't there for that one.
And where do you go from here?
Nowhere.
Okay. Where do the Cardinals go from here?
Great question. That's a great question. Now, overall, they go into facing Clayton Kershaw tonight. Best of luck. That'll be great. It's going to be a heck of a battle, man. Miles Michaelis has thrown the ball better recently, but we know Clayton is one of the best around. But just overall, bigger picture, and I'm talking about the fifth spot in the rotation. Guys, I don't know what they do here. I mean, Michael Wacha, while overall, and I know it sounds crazy looking at the line, like the stuff looked fine. I mean, throwing 96, he's throwing 97, has some good changeups, has some good curveballs, but overall, look, he didn't get the job done. And yet again, it's another Cardinal starting pitcher that has an outing under 5 innings. This bullpen can't hack it. It's 31 times now that the Cardinals have had a starter not get through 5. That's a problem. It's a big-time problem. And right now, I don't know what the answer is. I know that with off days, they don't have to go to anybody. They can have a 4-man rotation right now, which is great. But at some point, you're going to need that guy. And whether that guy is Michael Wacha or it's Ponce de Leon or it's maybe it's Johnny Holstaff and they just go bullpen day. Look, it's not as good of an option as you potentially could have when you talk about upgrading your roster at the trade deadline.
I was wondering about an opener, and we talked about Helsley as a possibility earlier in the show. You talk about Johnny Holstaff. If you could have Helsley give you 3 and Brebbia give you 2 and get your bullpen that way, that might be a creative outside-the-box idea for the Cardinals to try.
Yeah, I believe it's creative, and I think it would be very effective on that day because, just the two names that you rolled off right there, they've got great stuff. I believe both of them could do that. The problem to me is the place you put yourself in after that, because what happens the next day if it's one of your 4 starters that you do, you know, you believe in, you think that they can get you deeper into the game, but then the next day they don't, and all of a sudden it's 3 innings, then you got to go to your bullpen again for a lot of innings. I think there's risk involved to it. Now, who knows? Maybe they try to get creative with the opener, and then maybe it's Michael Wacha for a sprint since he looked a little bit better out of the bullpen. Maybe there's something to that, and he's had his struggles certainly last night, but just in the first inning overall, it's an idea. But gosh, man, it just stinks to be at this point of the year trying to get creative with that when this team is right there in contention. It's a problem.
So far, and we did get the news that Junior Fernandez is going to make his way to the team and pitch out of the bullpen. any idea early on how they're going to want to use him? I'm sure they're going to want to feel it out for a little bit and try to figure things out, but they must have some kind of idea how they're going to utilize a guy who's striking out 10 per 9 this year.
Yeah, you know, I would think in a perfect world, you would love to be able to ease somebody into it, into their major league debut, but it's not always a perfect world. You know, I thought the same thing when it was Ryan Helsley, and he comes into, bases loaded to face Yelich or something like that. Like, you just never know exactly how it's going to go. But I think if they have their druthers that he would, you know, come into a clean inning in a not-as-tight ball game. But as Mike Shildt always says, look, if you're on the 25-man roster, you're available and you're here. So if there's a situation where they think Fernandez can help, they're going to do so. And I like this call-up a lot. Junior's been throwing the ball really, really well at two different levels, at Springfield, at Memphis, striking out a lot of guys, Ranja, as you mentioned. And he's got that swing and miss stuff. It was a good transition for him. Last year, they moved him from the rotation to the bullpen. It's worked out quite well. And they've got another valuable weapon in the bullpen. It was a short stint for Adalberto Mejia, apparently not the answer. I guess I was wrong on that one. But
me too.
I'm excited to get, right? I'm excited to see Junior, see what he's got. And, look, the Cardinals need all the good arms that they can get within the system, whether it be in the bullpen, in the rotation. And it's a great opportunity for him.
And for Fernandez, through three levels of baseball this year, and that's high A, double A, triple A, about 60 innings of work, he's given up zero home runs. How difficult is that to do even at the minor league level?
Well, it's crazy. It really is. And it doesn't have to be about like the if you subscribe to the juice ball theory in the big leagues. Look, you still got bigger, stronger, faster athletes that are focusing on getting the ball in the air at every single level. So, to me, that's amazing to do that. I mean, even when you have guys that have good stuff, you still are going to run into a long ball. Now, I don't know if that's something that's going to keep up for the entire year. Would love it to, and it'll be a really big challenge against this Dodgers team if he gets a chance to face them in the next 2 days of keeping the ball in the yard. But I love it. To me, it says he's keeping the ball down. He's executing his pitches. He's mixing in the off speed really well. And, man, the Cardinals need it. So, to me, that's obviously a great stat.
BT, how would you describe the Michael Wacha outing last night, and what did you think of his stuff?
Well, I thought the stuff was really good, you know, but it means nothing, I guess, if, in fact, you don't execute in certain spots. Now, you have a walk, you have a little base hit, and Cody Bellinger, I mean, arguably is one of the hottest hitters on the planet. I mean, it's him, it's Yelich, it's Trout, and that's kind of the conversation. And you know, you just can't make a mistake. You certainly can't make one up in the zone and, middle in. And he did that. It was a fastball. He got out of the ballpark really, really quickly. And all of a sudden, it's a 3-0 lead. And you know that when you're playing a team like the Dodgers, you have a very thin margin for error. And, it could happen in the first inning. It could happen in the second. But if it happens, you're in trouble. The home run that he gave up to Jock Peterson, while it wasn't a terrible pitch location-wise, Peterson can hit off speed within the zone. I mean, you got to be able to bounce a breaking ball there. It was a curveball. It was middle. It was down, bottom of the strike zone, but still a strike nonetheless. And his defense didn't give him a ton of help, but yet not the excuse for Michael Wacha. To me, the stuff was good. The results were not, and it comes down to executing each and every pitch. And against the Dodgers, again, you don't have that much room to have any mistakes.
I'm glad we have your perspective as a former player. Would Wacha pitch better if Mike Shildt would have just ripped him after last night's game?
You know what? Probably. I definitely think that if Mike Shildt just went out there and said his stuff was awful, he was terrible, he's miserable, and he's got no reason to be in the big leagues, I really think that would inspire Michael Wacha for the next time out. What do you expect a manager to do, a manager to say? And again, in watching the game, and the overall numbers are what they are, we are in a results-driven business, but Michael Wacha is part of this team. Look, you evaluate what you see, and Mike Shildt has all of his guys back. He certainly does publicly. He does a great job of backing his guys. I will promise you that privately, when there's an issue or he has something, and I would assume that there have been some conversations already today or will be soon about some defensive lapses in that ball game yesterday, we hold these guys accountable, but there's no reason to air somebody out in the media. And by the way, it ain't going to help, you know? So there's very little to gain from something like that.
No, there's no way he's going to say anything publicly. I think we all understand it. It's weird to hear it, though, because it didn't, because of the results, it didn't seem like what he was doing was particularly good last night. So is there maybe a semantics argument here where you can have good stuff, but you're not hitting your spots, but it's still good, I guess? I mean, is that possible?
Well, again, it's a results-driven business. So if you don't get the job done, nobody really cares how it looks. I mean, it's about winning games. And the Cardinals are in a position right now where they need to win games. They've dropped 6 out of 8. The Cubs have won 4 in a row. All of a sudden, that one-game lead turns into 2.5-game deficit. So nobody's going to be looking at it was coming out of his hand good, and he hit 97, and good feel for some other stuff. It doesn't matter, I think, from a fan standpoint. But internally, when it's one of your guys, I mean, you have to look at stuff that way. You have to be able to evaluate what you're seeing on a pitch-by-pitch, day-by-day basis. And I think that's kind of where they're at with Michael Wacha at this point. So I think that you can find some good in different outings. But overall, I mean, Mike Shildt knows it. Michael Wacha knows it. You just got to get the job done, and he wasn't able to do it.
BT, when you started here, I've told you this before, and I've said to a lot of people, I thought that you were a natural and are a natural as a broadcaster. Last night, you had to do some things that you didn't expect to do with a sick play-by-play man, and I thought you did really well.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'll tell you what, Danny Mac, and by the way, he magically got better and better as the game went on. Come about the 7th inning, and I bet a ton of our listeners right now probably were not awake in the 7th inning, and I don't blame you one bit. But Danny Mac got a little bit better. Fortunately for me, I can read. There's a lot of promos that you have to read throughout the game. And, you know, the same way that I've gotten better and better, I hope, at the radio, Randy, watching you and listening to you go about your business and trying to emulate some of the things that you do. I tried to do the same thing with Dan doing the TV stuff and seeing how he comes in and out of stuff. So if, in fact, he has a day where the voice isn't quite there, maybe I can fill in and talk a little bit more. I'm sure a lot of fans weren't happy about it, but, hey, you got to do what you got to do sometime.
Hey, just make sure that the headset he used last night, he uses it again and doesn't give it to you. You don't want to contract whatever that is, man.
Oh, that's a good call.
Yeah.
Actually, I should have put some piece of tape. Although it's inevitable. Basically, by the time I get back and see you guys on Thursday, I got a feeling I'm going to be sick because I had my flight from on Sunday from St. Louis to L.A. It was 4 hours, and the gentleman in the middle seat had a wicked cough the entire time. Like, didn't stop for 4 hours. So I'll bring that home in our nice, cozy studio, and we'll share it together. You know, strength in numbers.
This is going to be great. I'm looking forward to being sick.
Yeah. Hey, no, it's probably the whooping cough or something.
Oh, cool.
I want to get one more of your stellar takes. Have you seen the Players' Weekend jerseys for this year?
Yeah, they're hideous.
Awful. Terrible.
It's brutal. Like, if I were playing, putting myself back in uniform, if I were playing a home game, you wouldn't see me, fellas, which actually might be nice for, you know, if I was pitching. It'd be tough to pick up the ball and white on white on white on white. They're awful.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, because we haven't talked about it yet today, they have unveiled those uniforms. It's going to be black versus white. So the white uniform is all white, with the exception of the numbers. There's a gray trim around the numbers. But the logo on the cap is white. The cap is white. The jersey is white. Everything is. And then on the other side, the opposite is true. It's maybe it'll look neat if players are wearing colorful arm sleeves and their shoes. Maybe it'll pop that way, but I don't know, man. It doesn't sound like it's going to be good.
You're definitely going to have to accessorize. That's a good point. You're going to have to bring a little bit of flair on your own in this one. And if anybody, just kind of painting the picture of at least what the hat is going to look like, if anybody's seen a picture of Pete Rose in the last, I don't know, 20 years,
yes,
it's
right.
That hat.
Yep.
It is that exact hat.
Yep.
There used to be a clothing store on Washington, before Washington became what it is now. It was called Gus's Fashions, and he had all kinds
of great
sports jerseys and caps and stuff. And one time I went in there, and I got a white-on-white Cardinal cap and a black-on-black Cardinal cap because I just thought it was cool. It was in the Nelly era.
And then you should have worn the same exact outfit, though. You had to go white T-shirt, some white painter's pants, and some white shoes, and then you basically had this uniform.
It would have been awesome. It would have been great. Yeah, I should have done that. I don't have that cap anymore, though. It got really dirty over the course of time.
I get a feeling that you'll be given the opportunity, since it is the Players' Weekend, to purchase all of this gear yet again, Randy. So if you did want to take that opportunity that you missed years ago, here's your chance.
I'm excited about it. BT, have a great telecast tonight. We'll be tuned in. I was tuned in last night until it was 6-0, and I said, I'm not even going to bother texting him because I thought I would bother you. I didn't want to bother you.
Nah, he was asleep.
Well, you know this, Randy. You never bother me, and Raj, I totally agree with you. He was absolutely sleeping, and probably rightfully so.
No, after 6-0, I was.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, that's fair.
I didn't see the last two. I missed the two-point conversion.
Did you really? You know those are exciting. You just never know how those are going to go.
All right. That was fun.
BT, have fun. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good, fellas. Thanks for having me. I'll see you Thursday.
See Leave
you,
the germs in L.A.
That is our friend and partner, Brad Thompson, here on 101 ESPN.
He's going to bring us back the Black Death.
It's going to be bad.
Oh, damn it.
Hey, Alex Ferrario is with us here in studio. He's our newest member here at 101 ESPN. And Alex is going to talk some Joel Edmondson and Blues with us and more next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. NHL arbitration is different than baseball arbitration, where in baseball, the player gives a number and the owner gives a number and the arbitrator chooses one of those. In hockey, the arbitrator can choose a number in between what the player requests and what the team offers. And today, the Blues, the Stanley Cup champion Blues, were given a $3.1 million number for defenseman Joel Edmondson. He had requested 4.2. The Blues had offered 2.3, and the arbitrator gives him 3.1 for the next season. Joel Edmondson is under contract for the year. Alex Ferrario, the newest member of our 101 ESPN family. He, of course, will have pregame, between periods, postgame for the St. Louis Blues, and a lot of reporting. He'll be at practice every day. He's with us in studio. Good to see you, sir.
Guys, great to be back.
What do you think of this award for Edmondson?
I think it's the right deal. I mean, 4.2 would have been overpaying Joel Edmondson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would have been a lot of money for a guy who, let's be honest here, he sticks in as your 5 or 6 defenseman, maybe your 7th defenseman with Bortuzzo and Gunnarsson. But for $3.1 million, you're getting a guy who can log you 15 to 18 minutes a night, a guy who can play on the top pairing with Pietrangelo, a guy who can play with Bouwmeester, a guy who can play with anybody on the roster, and he gives you some solid defense. He gives you physicality, which you're losing in Pat Maroon. So I think for $3.1 million for 1 year of Joel Edmondson, I don't think that's a bad problem.
And by the way, the teams in the CBA, if they don't like the award, they have a 48-hour walk away. Remember when the Hawks did that with Antti Niemi? He beat him in arbitration, and the Hawks walked away from him, and he became a free agent. The Blues, Doug Armstrong says that Edmondson is important to the team, and he's happy to have him back on the team. But if it would have been 4.2, the Blues could have walked away.
Yeah. Right, and really, this is only a $100,000 raise. It's not that much.
Well,
he's going to make more than he made last year, and he barely got a bump.
Well, let's be honest here. If you look around the National Hockey League, look for a fourth or a fifth pairing defenseman that's making less than Joel Edmondson.
Right.
I guarantee you, you're not going to find it. You find guys, I mean, look at the Buffalo Sabres. They're paying a guy named Colin Miller $3.9 million a year. I don't think anybody knows who that is. So Joel Edmondson, I mean, he's a guy who you can rely on. And, you know, the other factor in this one as well, and this one, you can look at it and say, well, what are they going to do in this situation? You don't have anybody beyond Edmondson. Now, you brought in that Derek Pouliot, who's a younger player who can jump in, a Mitch Rinke, a Nikola Mikola. But other than that, there's nobody who can step in that has NHL experience. And Gunnarsson, who was injury-prone last year, Bortuzzo, Bouwmeester, these guys might get hurt. You're going to need someone.
And Craig Berube likes that physical presence. He doesn't particularly love the way Edmondson played last year, and that's why he sat as much as he did in the playoffs. But we know that that's in there.
Yeah.
The thing is, aside from Bortuzzo, especially if they don't bring back Maroon, and it doesn't look like they will, there aren't a lot of physical presences on this team.
That's exactly right. And, you know, you've made a great point with Rutherford earlier, Randy, of talking about how, if you think about it, Joel Edmondson's going through a lot of defensive coach. Not just Ken Hitchcock talking in his ear, but with Bradshaw and with Rick Wilson, and then, of course, with Daryl Sador, who was here. Mm-hmm. Now he's actually got someone who seems to be a permanent fix in Mike Van Ryn, who's not focused so much on the offensive side or the defensive side, it's just playing the right style of hockey. And the physical presence, I think, is huge. I mean, what were fans chiming for throughout the regular seasons? Like, why don't these guys get more physical out there? Mm-hmm. Well, Pat Maroon, Joel Edmondson, Bortuzzo, those are your guys. So you're relying on those two defensemen now.
You want the physicality. I think people want that perfect balance, though, because, and I mentioned earlier, the turnovers were a problem.
Yeah.
The other thing that was a problem is taking silly penalties and retaliation, that kind of thing. How do they shore that up with him? I mean, clearly he knows, right?
Right.
But emotions get involved when you're on the ice and you do stupid things. So how do they fix that?
Yeah, and he was notorious for it. I think that was a major reason you didn't see him play in that Boston series that much, because Boston was such a good power play team. I think the only way you fix that is more coaching from Craig Berube. And I mean, I know that sounds cliche to say, like, oh yeah, more coaching and he'll be better. But I think a full season with Craig Berube as the head coach can do wonders. I think if you have him in training camp going through some of the items, and look, let's be honest, Joel Edmondson's major issues were the undisciplined play of not skating with the forwards and having to use his stick as a penalty, tripping a couple of guys, and then the extracurricular. So if he finds a way to tone those down, I think he's just as solid of a defenseman as you'll find.
Can a lot of that be, well, certainly it could be worked on, but can a lot of it be handled through a training camp?
That's a good question. I would say yes, just because you're working more of it, you have more preseason opportunities. I wouldn't be surprised, and you know how they divvy up those preseason games where, you know, you get the veterans to play a big chunk of them towards the end and not the beginning. I wouldn't be surprised if Edmondson is in more of preseason games than other defensemen, just so he has more practice, more reps, and can focus on those penalties.
Alex, great stuff. Thank you very much.
Guys, thank you as always.
Alex Ferrario, he will be a huge part of our Blues coverage here on 101 ESPN as we take over the radio rights for the Stanley Cup champs for this 2019-2020 season. Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker, and we go now to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line and our friend Hub Arkish from Westwood One and the executive editor of Pro Football Weekly is with us. NFL training camps are well underway now. Actually, some of them are over. The LA Rams training camp is already over. And Hub, first of all, thanks for taking some time with us. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Good to be with you guys.
Hey, let's start with this. I remember the story back in 1976 when Dick Vermeil was doing three-a-days in Philadelphia, and it was the bicentennial, and all these fireworks are going off, and DV is saying, what the hell is that? And they said, Coach, it's the 4th of July. We're in Philadelphia. It's the bicentennial. Now, the Rams had a training camp that lasted 7 days. It's unbelievable how fast it goes.
Well, it is, but what we're talking about is when they actually go away for training camp. I mean, technically, training camp is going to run right up to the beginning of the season. The trend in the league, actually, is for teams to stay home now. I think you've got less than half the teams are even going camping, so to speak. They're just doing everything at their facility. But with the new CBA, or the old CBA now, it's 8 years old, but when they signed it in 2011, one of the things the players got was a reduction in the amount of padded practices they have. They had to get days off. They certainly have made it less of a grind than it was in the Dick Vermeil days.
Does that make the product overall, the game product, better or worse?
You know, it's a great question. I think that the rules about the amount of contact and padded practice that they're able to have extend through the entire season. And I think it probably has hurt the product a little bit as they practice less going full speed and playing tackle football. But at the same time, there's the argument that it has made the game a little safer for them. So if that's the trade-off, I think that's one that everybody will take.
Hub, there are a lot of Chicago Bears fans here in St. Louis, including the gentleman sitting right next to me. And it seems there are differing opinions about Mitchell Trubisky. Where do you think Trubisky is right now as he heads into this his third season?
Well, he's, obviously the answer at this point for them. I think that he's going to be a very good quarterback. What's ironic about it is I realize that the Rams are a sore subject for some, in St. Louis. But the bottom line is that Jared Goff is probably the closest comp to Trubisky. He's a year ahead of him. They're similar style quarterbacks. Trubisky is a better athlete by far. Neither one of them has the kind of NFL arm, of course, as you see in the Patrick Mahomes or something like that. But at the end of the day, I think Trubisky is going to be a pretty good quarterback. And I think he has shown that dramatic development from year one to year two. He is having a good training camp for him right now. He's got remarkable competitive spirit, leadership skills. He's a really bright young man. And so I think that the Bears are pretty happy with him. And I think that he won't be the reason that this team doesn't take the next step.
Is it going to be the kicker or what?
Well, you know, guys, half the teams in the league are looking for a better kicker. I realize the focus with the Bears because of the whole double doink, if you will, and it isn't going to go away soon. But I actually like they've got these two kids in camp right now, Elliott Fry and Eddie Pinheiro, and I think Pinheiro has a chance to be really good. Now, Ryan Pace was unusually open and frank with us with his camp opening press conference a couple weeks ago. He said there are a couple teams that have two veterans in camp that they're keeping an eye on because there's one that they might like if he were to be cut loose. But I don't understand how the Bears would go all through preseason with a competition between these two first-year players, Elliott Fry and Eddie Pinheiro, pick one, and then the day after the final cuts, they're just going to cut them loose and bring in a veteran who just got cut by another team. It just doesn't make much sense to me. So my guess is that they're going to take a chance on one of these two, and I think that while both have been good, Pinheiro is the one who appears to maybe have the ability to be real good, and I suspect he's going to be the kicker for the Bears, at least on opening night.
Hub Arkush of Pro Football Weekly with us on 101 ESPN. You also wrote a Pro Football Weekly about the Bears receivers, and we have a guy that still spends a lot of time here in St. Louis, Isaac Bruce, a former Memphis receiver, who really loves a similar guy from Memphis that the Bears have in Anthony Miller. Do you see any similarities? If you can picture Isaac and then think about what you're seeing from Anthony Miller, are the similarities there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I covered Isaac Bruce his entire career. Don't understand, quite frankly, why he's not in Canton yet. I expect he will be. And Anthony Miller is actually very similar in style and body type, probably a little bit faster than Isaac Bruce was. But other than that, it is a great comparison. Now, you know, he's going into his second year. He played almost the whole season last year with a chronic shoulder dislocation. He dislocated week three, and then it popped in and out the rest of the season. So he didn't pile up huge numbers, 34 catches for about 430 yards, as I recall. But he had 7 touchdowns on those 34 catches. You find a receiver who's going to catch a touchdown every 5 times he catches the football, you've got somebody pretty special. And he does appear healthy this year. He did have surgery on that shoulder. When you have these chronic dislocations, what they'll do is go in and tighten up all the ligaments around it. So far, so good. And so assuming that that is no longer a chronic problem, it's a kid who in his second year has a chance to have a real breakout season. And it's more than that. I mean, the Bears, he's going to be their number two. Allen Robinson's legit number one. Taylor Gabriel played like a legitimate number three last year. But then they've got all kinds of players behind them. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with Emmanuel Hall, mm-hmm. the undrafted rookie free agent out of Missouri, who some felt was the best receiver in the SEC last year. He's competing with Riley Ridley, Calvin's little brother, who they got in the fourth round out of Georgia. They've got Javon Wims from Georgia that they got last year. They signed Marvin Hall away from Atlanta. They got a few other kids in camp. They appear to be pretty well loaded at wide receiver.
Who's going to blink first in the Zeke Elliott situation?
Chris, my guess is it's going to have to be Zeke, because as much as Jerry Jones loves his superstars, and Elliott in particular is a guy that he literally went to war with Roger Goodell over on the suspension a couple of years ago, the bottom line is in today's NFL, you just can't pay running backs, you know, like you pay the top paid players. You don't have to. You can find them in a lot of different places. And as good as that offensive line is, I know that Jerry Jones loves Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott may be the best running back in the NFL. But it was actually Jones who pointed out a couple weeks ago that the last time a Super Bowl team had the leading rusher on the team was the Cowboys with Emmitt Smith 25 years ago. It's not the way the NFL is played anymore. So, I think that Elliott, he is under contract. I mean, it's not like, you know, he's a free agent. And so And he stands to lose a significant amount of money because he was a fourth pick overall in the draft. So he's got a fair amount of – I mean, I think he's going to get about $8-9 million this year if he plays. He's going to have to blink unless – you never know with Jones. With his ego, you know, as I said, he loves the superstars so much. But he's got to figure out Dak Prescott. They got to decide what they're going to do with Amari Cooper. I just don't see how they can give Elliott anywhere near what he's asking for right now.
Hub, one more from each of us. I want to start here with who you think right now is a team to look out for in each conference. Who are you thinking that, okay, this is a team that is primed for a real run in 2019?
Well, in the NFC, I've got the Saints beating the Bears in the NFC title game. I just think that this is probably their last best run with Drew Brees. They are loaded on offense. I love the addition of Jared Cook at tight end. You know, to be another weapon for Drew Brees. They can be good on defense at times. They're not as consistent as you'd like. They're certainly not as good as the Bears or the Rams, but they can be good enough. And to me, they're the team to beat. Now, if there's a surprise that you're looking for, that may be the Atlanta Falcons. They're a popular pick for a lot of folks. They've struggled the last couple of years with injuries, made a lot of coaching changes, but there is a bunch of talent on that team as well. In the AFC, I'm actually picking the Chargers to beat the Saints in the Super Bowl. So they're the team to me that I would watch. I think they are the most loaded on both sides of the ball. Do not discount the Patriots. It doesn't matter how many players they lose as long as they don't lose Brady or Belichick. I think the Chiefs are going to slump a little bit this year. There's no way that Patrick Mahomes can replicate what he did last year. Now, this one's a little tougher for me, though, because I was convinced that Tyreek Hill was going to miss at least a year. The fact that he's not being punished is unexplainable and inexcusable to me, but he is there. And so that makes them – I've got to go back and rethink it, but I still think the Chargers are the best team in that division. I think the Chiefs are probably a wild card team. I'm not buying the Browns. I'm sorry, but I they've added a few really good players, all of whom are likely to be problems in the locker room. They're still not very good on the offensive line. They need a little more pass rush. So I don't see that. The Jaguars could bounce back. There's plenty of talent on that football team. But I think the teams to beat right now are the Saints in the NFC and the Chargers in the AFC.
I keep wondering, when's the last year Tom Brady's going to be any good? Is there any way to predict this? Because it seems like it was going to happen 5 years ago, and here we are 5 years later.
Chris, I mean, he didn't have the numbers last year. I want to say he only threw, 29 touchdowns and 12 picks, something like that. Those are not Brady-esque numbers, but he went and won a Super Bowl, and nobody should be confused, even though it was a defensive struggle. He made the big play to Gronk when he had to. Now, he's not going to have Gronk this year, at least not at the start of the year, so that could hurt him a little bit. But the guy is he's the greatest player in the history of the game. I don't know how you can argue it when you look at his numbers and his championships. So I'm not going to try and predict it. I think that he turned 42 this year. It's kind of weird to think that he could continue to play at this level, he's coming off a reigning Super Bowl. He wasn't the MVP of this game, but I mean, he's the champ. So until somebody knocks him off the throne, I see no reason to think that he can't have them in contention for another Super Bowl.
Hub, good to talk to you as the season unfolds. I'm sure we'll speak again. Have a great evening.
All right, thanks for having me, guys. Always fun to visit.
Appreciate it. That is Hub Arkish of Pro Football Weekly and Westwood One, and he will be on the sideline for the Bears and the Packers, the first game of the season, a celebration to start the 100th anniversary of the NFL.
In 15 years, you know who we're going to talk about being better than Tom Brady?
Who?
Mitch.
Oh, there you go.
Probably not.
Next up, if you're not sold on attending the Area 51 raid next month, the latest development might change your mind. That's next before Teoli on 101 ESPN.